It's Current State here on 90.5 WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. Thank you for joining us today. Three volunteer counselors have been dismissed by the Listening Ear Crisis Intervention Center in East Lansing after it was discovered that they were on Michigan's sex offender registry. Justin Hinckley of the Lansing State Journal first reported the story. Along with firing the three people, the Listening Ear will begin performing background checks on all counselors. As a result of the incident, State Senator Curtis Hertel Jr. has begun drafting legislation to prevent registered sex offenders from counseling sexual assault victims or children. Yesterday, I asked Hertel to describe what Michigan law has been lacking.
Yeah, it's one of those situations that I assumed what was happening was against the law. And I think most people would feel that way as well, that it seems like common sense that a sex offender is not allowed to work with those that have been sexually abused or children. Unfortunately, that was not the case. And when I and my staff figured it out that it wasn't the case, we immediately sprung into action and we used one of our two legislative priorities that we get during the session, two that speed up the process, to have a bill drafted. I hope that bill will be on the floor this week. I hope we'll be able to get as many co-sponsors as possible. I assume it'll have strong bipartisan support, considering what we're talking about.
And how would your legislation address the problem exactly?
What my legislation will do is to make it a crime for a sex offender to volunteer in an organization that deals directly with sexual abuse victims and or children, and put the onus really on them that they have a responsibility to avoid certain areas. And we already have rules like that in place in the state. And I think that is the best way to assure that a situation like what happened in the Listening Ear will not happen again.
What role do background checks play?
I think background checks are important. I am sort of surprised they weren't being done there. I think they should be done at all nonprofits. At the same time, the state has a certain role to play, and I'm not sure if our role is to tell every organization how to run. I think in this situation, we're best actually focusing on the offenders and making it a criminal act if they actually violate it. If they violate the terms of their parole, if they violate the law, they will be punished. And I think that is a more effective way in this regard than getting to all these different organizations.
I know you're hoping for bipartisan support. Are you expecting it?
I think so.
Are you hearing of it?
Yeah. From the discussions I've had, you know, Republicans, Democrats, Independents, nobody is, I think, opposed to this idea, or at least very few.
Is it still in draft form? Where is it right now in the pipeline?
So we submitted to the Legislative Service Bureau. We submitted our language. They take it and make sure that it's legal and written correctly, and then we submit it this week. So we believe we'll have it back this week and be available for co-sponsorship on the Senate floor.
Let's go a little bit deeper as to what actually happened. The Lansing State Journal stories have indicated that prior to this, the Listening Ear took the approach of accepting individuals for who they are now and not for who they have been in the past. That's why they haven't been previously performing background checks on volunteers. What do you make of that rationale?
Listen, I think it's a lovely idea, but I just don't think it's dealing with some of the harsh realities that we have out there. And especially when you have someone who has been sexually abused, who's been raped or assaulted, the idea that that person would have to go and deal with and speak to a person who had committed a act like the ones those three gentlemen have committed. I'm not trying to say, you know, they haven't become better people. What I'm saying is that I'm not worried as much about them as I'm worried about the victims of sexual assault. Those victims should not have to be re-victimized by dealing with someone who has been a sex offender in the past. It is too dangerous to assume that we know someone just by seeing them or by talking to them. Past actions do have some relationship to how someone will act in the future. And I don't think someone like that should be dealing with someone who's been assaulted. I don't think it's right. And I think a lot of assault victims would tell you that they feel re-victimized by having to deal with someone who was a sexual predator in the past.
We're talking with State Senator Curtis Hertel Jr. about legislation he's working on to prevent registered sex offenders from counseling sexual assault victims and children here in Michigan. Several groups that work with victims have cut ties, at least for now, with the listening ear, including MSU, the Firecracker Foundation, and the Small Talk Children's Assessment Center. Do you fear that victims of assault in the Lansing area could be underserved by the fallout from this?
Well, I think all those groups are going to have to pick up a little bit and do more. I know that the listening ear, just on this past week, finally agreed to eliminate those volunteers and to start doing background checks. That's a good first step in actually rebuilding a trust in this community. I think they did lose a lot of trust among not only advocates, but also people who have been sexually abused. So I'm hoping that they'll be able to rebuild that trust. But I think it's a serious problem when for 22 days, for 3 weeks, they knew about this and really didn't do much. And my feeling is they should be making an apology to the community, that they made a mistake and that this was a bad plan and that they won't do it again.
Any thoughts, any advice for victims right now while we wait on legislation?
Well, hopefully this problem's ended in Lansing, with what Listening Ear just did. So that's good. I hope they won't have to wait long for this legislation. We still have a few days in this session before we break for summer. It's not going to get done before that, but we certainly want to get it done before January. So I think we have places where people can go, but we still need the listening ear to work. It's just they have to rebuild that trust with the community. I hope they do.
State Senator Curtis Hertel Jr. of Meridian Township is our guest here on WKAR's Current State. Some other topics here. Yesterday on the program, we spoke with State Rep Tom Leonard about the Detroit Public Schools bailout plan that's gone to the Senate from the House. He spoke in favor and voted in favor of the House plan, saying that it includes proper reforms. What do you make of it?
I think they missed the mark. I think the Senate plan was a good plan. I think it helped build to a long-term stability for the school district. The Detroit Public Schools are in a very bad situation. And sure, some of it is because of local decisions, but a lot of it's because of state decisions. If you look at the history, when we first took over the financial management of Detroit Public Schools in the late 90s, There were 140,000 kids in the system. They're now down to 40,000 kids for a system that was actually at one point at 300,000. So you can't run a school system with 40,000 kids. The emergency manager there has taken out short-term loans to try to keep the budget balanced. And now only $3,000 is getting back into the classroom. You have mold. You have rodents. You can't control the heat in the buildings. It's a terrible situation. But the only way to solve it is to long term rebuild the district. And I don't think that the House plan does that. And the biggest part they don't do is actually help to look at closing or at least preventing from opening more charter schools that are failing. I don't have a problem with some charter schools. There are some charter schools in Detroit that do a great job. But there are some of the worst charter schools in the state, also in the city of Detroit. And some of them are just making a profit off of kids. And we need to find a balance there. And I think the Senate plan did that. The House plan certainly does not. You know, my grandfather was a teacher in the Detroit Public Schools. But right now, the teachers that are teaching there really want to help these kids. There is no reason to teach in that district, considering all the problems it's having, unless you're really passionate about wanting to help those kids. And to punish them makes no sense. Maybe we should be punishing the emergency managers who are making, you know, triple, six-figure salaries, got a huge bailout when they left, and put us in this terrible situation. Those are the people we should be punishing, not the teachers. It doesn't make any sense.
Could a Detroit Education Commission still take shape here, or do you expect the measure to go that goes to the governor's desk not to include one?
Listen, I always have hope. But I tell you, what I've seen in this process over and over again is the Senate comes up with a bipartisan plan And the House Republicans derail that, send it back to the Senate, and the Senate caves. I've told some of my colleagues in the Senate that I think sometimes they have Stockholm Syndrome. They continually send good legislation over to the House and get bad legislation back and continue to do it over and over and over again.
Do you expect that this time?
I hope not, but I think that every indication so far is that the Senate will pass the House plan, and I think they'll do it on a straight partisan vote, and I think it'll be bad for the city of Detroit and bad for public schools around the state, because long term, when the district fails, it will affect every district in the state. We will be on the hook for those dollars. We have to save those schools, not only because it's the morally correct thing to do for the kids in Detroit, but it's the financially correct thing to do for the entire state, and this plan does not do that.
A pair of Senate energy bills that update the state's most recent energy legislation recently moved out of committee into the full Senate. These are Senate bills 437 and 438 from Mike Nofs. How do you feel about these pair of bills?
I think they need more work. I don't think they're terrible. I agree with parts of them. I think that we need to have just a little more work on the renewable side and on the energy efficiency side. And I think that so far my caucus has been holding strong on that. There's a big debate in the Republican caucus between the choice side and the regulated energy side. Mike Nofs on the regulated side. I agree with him on that. And what I will hope happen is that he will end up agreeing with us to include some more renewables in that discussion. I'm not going to vote for it in its current form. I'm hoping we can get some more renewables in there.
How long do you expect it to take?
Well, the Republican caucus was talking about it for 4 or 5 hours last week and still having it's a long bill.
This is taking a long time, though.
It's going to take a long time. But, you know, sometimes it takes government a long time to get something right. And I'd rather get a good product than have it happen quicker.
In the aftermath of Melissa Gilbert's withdrawal from the 8th District congressional race, what Democrats would you like to see consider a run?
Well, I think, you know,
you can include yourself in that if you want.
Well, I mean, people have talked to me and, you know, I'm not saying no right now, but I will say that, you know, my first job and responsibility is as a father. My dad taught me that you could be a public servant and still be a good father. If someone's got to show me how serving in Congress and being a good father is possible. So it's just difficult. So I'm looking at those options. But right now, if you ask me today, the answer would be no, but I'm still listening. I think we have some great opportunity. Now, I think Sam Singh would be a great candidate. Barb Byron would be a great candidate. Gretchen Whitmer would obviously be a great candidate. Andy Shore, Tom Cochran, they would all be great. Nathan Triplett, I've heard his name bandied around. I think he'd be a good candidate.
How long do you think it'll take for everybody who wants a say in this to arrive at at least a short list?
Well, technically, legally, we can't do much now. We have to wait till after the primary is over, and then she has to apply for her medical reasoning for getting off the ballot, and then they make a choice. But practically speaking, if we want to win, we need a candidate within the next couple of weeks, because the reality is we need to raise the money to actually run a real campaign, and we got to get to the doors. It's a big district. You're talking about not only Ingham County, and I'm sure Democrats are going to do great in Ingham, but Livingston and Northern Oakland, and you really have to get out there on the doors, talking to people, to events, and running for Congress has to be your job for the next 3 months. So somebody's got to decide their willingness to do that.
State Senator Curtis Hertel Jr. of Meridian Township, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Mark.